T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
I have been calling for a long time. Every school, secure the perimeter of those schools. Equip them with retired police and military. They should be on every floor of every school. And the solution I offer also proposes every school hire these people. If they donate 15 hours a week to their local school, let's take it and make it that they pay no income taxes, state, federal, at all. As a thank you for them donating their time. It won't cost us a penny. The security personnel donate the 15 hours. Our schools are safer. We could do that with stores. We can do that in malls. We can do that pretty much anywhere the public is. Courthouses. We can expand that out everywhere and keep Americans safe.
There you go. Fixes it. So I did some simple math, counting restaurants, schools, and churches, and there's 1.1 million of them. So I have a former U.S. Attorney David Hickton here, who's a friend and who knows more about this than anyone I've ever known. David, what troubles me when we have this sort of cataclysmic events in America is that you get that kind of rhetoric, and then he has a massive following, and people believe that jargon.
Right, and what he said there is not helpful.
Pull your close-up up to the mic. I apologize, sir.
What he said there was not helpful at all as far as I'm concerned, because what we need to do is prevent these incidents and de-escalate. We don't need to fan these incidents and escalate. He sounds like he's watched too many cowboy movies. We're supposed to have evolved to a better place. And escalation by arming teachers, creating armaments in shopping malls and places of commercial establishment is not going to solve this problem.
And you can't circle the globe, sir.
You can't. We don't have the resources for that. Law enforcement understands this. You know, when I was United States Attorney, I had a couple threats against me. And the situation was such that there became a conversation about whether I should be armed. And I was told very flatly by the Secret Service and the U.S. Marshals that if I armed myself, there was a better chance I would be shot than if I didn't.
Why?
Because statistically, that's true. A person who's armed is more likely to have that gun taken from them. And the question asked of me is, would you be prepared to shoot someone? And just go through the decision tree on that. There's a knock at your door. Do you know if it's a family member? Or do you know if it's someone else? When you're in this agitated environment where you believe every noise is a threat, or you're, in my case, actually under threat at that moment, the question is, what's the best way to protect yourself? The best way is to prevent it and de-escalate it, not create a hail of bullets.
And in that situation, at night, every year, 5-6 times, I'm reading a story about a father who shoots his daughter who comes home early from a sleepover party and sees a shadow in her hallway.
There was an incident on the news just the other day of a man in South Carolina who was shot through the glass portion of his door by the police when they came to his house. And that was an accidental shooting that was the product of too much armament.
So this notion that everybody should have a gun is a dangerous notion.
From my point of view, it's insane. And as you say, when these incidents happen like this, we're reaching out to try and explain something complicated with a simple answer, which we can't do. And we're trying to solve a complicated problem with a simple answer, which we can't do. And often that leads to the wrong answer. So adding guns to the equation, particularly in schools or in shopping malls, is not the solution. Look, the Secret Service for years has been tasked, particularly after the Kennedy assassination,
sure.
to try and prevent assassins from attacking our leadership. And they do an unbelievable job. If anyone's interested, you can go on the Secret Service website. There's the exceptional case study where they studied people who shoot other people. And they created a profile. And it looks very much like the profile that the National Coalition on Gun Violence just released yesterday with regard to these mass shooters. So what we need to do is create legal, appropriate constitutional ways to identify these people and then create a combination of resources between the public sector and law enforcement and average ordinary citizens who see something and say something.
David, what the hell, where the hell did this white nationalist terminology come from? No one ever even heard of this until a year ago.
Well, actually, white nationalism has been a problem that we've been trying to stamp out for centuries, if you think about it. So Nazi Germany was white nationalism. Apartheid in South Africa was white nationalism. The Ku Klux Klan was white nationalism. And there have been white nationalist movements around the globe for a long time. They're hate-based, they're bigotry-based, and they generally are based upon the premise that there be no immigration, no interracial dealing with, no diversity, as we call it, and that the white race is somehow under assault and that we must purify society by keeping the race white. Now, that's kind of crazy if you think about
it
America,
is,
because that's totally alien to not only the history of how we were founded, but what our country is about. But it has received a resurgence in a couple notable areas in the last 20 years. When the assault weapon ban occurred in 1994, which no matter what your politics are about that, banning assault weapons reduced these attacks dramatically. And when the assault weapon ban was lapsed, these attacks came upon us again. So, put aside the politics, the facts are the assault weapon ban worked. But after the assault weapon ban in 1994, your listeners will probably remember we had a revival of what was white supremacist, white nationalist, anti-government sentiment that was depicted in Waco and the Oklahoma City bombing in the mid-90s. You'd be interested to know that the National Security Division of the Department of Justice was not created to deal with Al-Qaeda. It was originally created to deal with this problem, particularly after Oklahoma City. And we were very concerned about this in the 1990s. Then it sort of passed, although it never was a fire that was completely out. It was a simmering ember fire. And then in the birther movement in 2012, it revived again.
All right, we're going to take a break with David Hickton. He's here for the hour. We'd love to hear from you if you have questions. We're talking about white nationalism. We're talking about terrorism. We're talking about the internet, social media, profiling, all of it. 866-391-1020. All right. Marty Griffin here. I have David Hickton, former U.S. attorney. We're talking about terrorism. We're talking about white nationalism. I have Ron Layton. Worked for the Secret Service for decades, two PhDs, four presidents. Ron, your observation of Mr. Hickton's comments, sir.
So, Mr. Hickton, good afternoon, and I remember when you were a U.S. attorney, I was in charge of our West Virginia office. Thank you very much for your service to our great nation.
Thank you, Ron. Good to talk to you again. I remember you.
Yeah, thank you. So, Marty, I mean, just a couple of points about this kind of investigation. If, you know, these are difficult cases to work from a law enforcement perspective, because when someone says, I am going to go out and commit a crime, the mere words saying that, as I said in my text to you, it's not illegal to espouse hatred. And the tools that are available for the domestic cases are not the same tools that are available for the international cases. So things like intrusive FISA warrants, those kinds of things, you can't do that for cases of domestic terrorism. And, you know, the other issue with this is that the definitions, if you look over the past 15 years of domestic terrorism, have changed quite a bit. So right now, even with the shooting in El Paso and the shooting in Dayton, this suspect will be charged with things like criminal homicide, those kinds of charges, because there is no federal statute that you can charge domestic terrorism. And that's half the problem.
David, jump in here.
Absolutely true, completely accurate, and it needs to be fixed. What is also true, though, even if there are statutes, because you can use the gun statutes and the hate crime statutes, as has been done with Mr. Bowers here, you can find a federal charge if you want one. But what is also true is if a person mentions Muhammad on a communication, internet or otherwise, law enforcement will jump on him. But you can glorify Hitler on a radio communication, a telephone call or an email, and you're free.
It's amazing.
And all of these problems are not going to be solved by our representatives in Washington. They're going to be solved by the people listening to this show and the public at large. When they say, we're not going to have this anymore, we're not going to have this anymore. But they need to be educated as to what is really going on. Because in addition to the gap, Ron, that you point out in the law, the priority in law enforcement is international terrorism, not domestic terrorism. And I said, if I said it once, I said it 1,000 times. The people I was worried about from 2010 to 2016 as U.S. attorney doing harm here in Western Pennsylvania looked like me, not Osama bin Laden.
Mr. Hickman, I couldn't agree with you more. There's a study that goes back, I think it's 2009, where exactly what you said was written about, and now you see a lot of those early DHS studies.
And I think what you're seeing is there's opportunism on all sides, probably, of this debate, because we're so frayed right now. We're grieving as a country. These are complicated problems, but people for years have been taking the terror threat from overseas and using it to demagogue against Muslims. Muslims are about a quarter of the world, and the vast majority of them, the overwhelming majority of them, are devout, God-fearing, religious people. They believe in a higher authority, and they live their lives in a way that would be exemplary. A portion of that faith has been hijacked by a small group of people who have been spun up, principally by a guy that we were able to take out when I was U.S. attorney nationally, Anwar al-Awlaki, who was spinning up people online, using the internet to take a small movement and make a large movement.
It's amazing.
And there is a direct connection between some of the alt-right and white nationalism stuff that's being spewed across this country over the internet and how ISIS and Al-Qaeda grew. And someone needs to call that out. The public needs to be educated about it, and they need to say we're not going to accept it.
Is the public ready to take that on, Ron?
So I would tell you that it doesn't appear so.
Right.
I mean, every time that there's a shooting, we talk about things like our hearts and prayers go out, but then you know what happens? 10 days later, there's another shooting.
It's true.
One of the things that always bothered me in law enforcement, and Mr. Hickman, you hit on this, is that I can change the course of an investigation with one word. If I say Mohammed, there's a certain track law enforcement will take. If I say Hitler, that second track that law enforcement will take is protected freedom of speech.
Mm. Right. All right, man.
One word.
Thanks,
one
Ron.
One word.
Thank you, Ron Layton.
Thank you both. Take
Thank
care.
You.
All right. Marty Griffin here, joined by former U.S. Attorney David Hickton. David, extrapolate on what you're doing right now so folks understand your connection to a lot of the things going on in America today.
Well, since I left the Department of Justice in early 2017, I joined the University of Pittsburgh to create a cyber institute called the University of Pittsburgh Institute of Cyber Law, Policy, and Security. And what we're looking at is all of the unanswered questions that are created by the growing technology on digital space or cyber and the slow-moving laws. And how we would find hate speech online is one of those questions that I get asked all the time. We're working on finding victims of human trafficking. We did a big study on election security because our election in 2016 was hacked by the Russians. And we take that threat as a given, and we wanted to identify some things we could do here in Pennsylvania that we could, steps we could take to protect ourselves.
There has been this notion in the last few days of shifting directions for the federal government, including the FBI, to more of the white nationalist movement and what's happening on radicalization online. Are they capable of doing that, sir?
They are capable of doing it. They have to add resources for sure, and they have to change their focus because it's just simply the fact that over time, since 9/11, they have neglected this white nationalistic threat in favor of an international terrorism threat, when in fact the larger threat to us is the white nationalist threat.
I want to throw some numbers out to folks that they might find shocking. David Hickton knows this. Between 2005 and 2016, social media played a role in radicalizing 50% of individuals in extremist groups. That's fascinating to me. And one more. 2016, social media, including services like Facebook, WhatsApp, Skype, Instagram, and YouTube, plus personal blogs and forums, played a role in radicalizing and mobilizing roughly 90% of lone actors.
Right. And it's the lone wolf that you worry about, the person who's in Western Pennsylvania, who's disaffected, who finds their way on the internet, which is a safe, anonymous environment. And the adversaries look for people like this.
Exactly.
You know, we had this big debate about a U.S. attorney in Texas who had no terrorism experience. I actually had terrorism experience because we had a national security cyber group that went and looked for this problem. And we brought cases while I was here. And they all fit the exact same pattern that was just described in the reference you read. Someone who was here, who was in our midst, who was identified by, in one case, Al-Qaeda, to become the American interpreter on an Al-Qaeda website. And when we caught him, he was teaching people how to make bombs.
It's amazing. And what I always tell people this, David, so back in the day, you would have one guy talking to one guy that he found, and they'd meet under a bridge and exchange information. Now you have a lonely guy. All he has to do to become radicalized, where he finds like-minded people on the internet, and all of a sudden he's empowered. I mean, I'm being simplistic, but that happens, right?
Right. And the internet is not constrained by being accurate. So there's nonsense on the internet. And there was a spectacularly horrible story of the man who came up and shot up a pizza parlor.
Yes.
After he was led to believe on the internet that Hillary Clinton was running an abortion factory in the basement of this pizza parlor. First of all, it had no basement. Second, she had no connection to it. But this person was spurred to act. He believed that this was his mission based on false information being radicalized over the internet.
Mm. What's the... If you could wave a magic wand, Mr. Hickton, what would you do?
Well, I think, as I said earlier, this is a complicated problem, and we need to look at all the factors that affect where we are. So if we talk about mass shootings as distinct from the radicalized lone wolf domestic citizen who becomes a terrorist, if we talk about mass shootings, we've got to talk about guns. We have way more guns than anyone else in the world. The statistic that was released this week is this was the 250th mass shooting in this country on the 219th day of the year, with mass shootings being defined as four individuals being killed at the same time in a public place. The next closest country in the world had two. Let me repeat that.
It's amazing.
The 250th mass shooting on the 219th day of the year, the next closest country had two. Now, you can be in favor of the Second Amendment. You can be a sportsman who likes guns. But it's high time that we come to realize that there's no constitutional right we have that doesn't have some restrictions on it. After Sandy Hook, I thought our representatives in Washington would come together. There was an effort for them to come together. The fact that they didn't come together after Sandy Hook leaves me despondent over the fact that what happened this weekend is going to move them. So I don't expect much from our representatives in Washington until your listeners and the public at large say we're sick of this.
Yeah, but I don't see that happening, David, until they got a bullet that comes through their window. I just don't see it. They think it's much easier to go to Walmart and buy a gun. I mean, I see it day in and day out.
Yeah, and it's just a failed strategy. I mean, today there are some on the right side of the political spectrum are saying this is video games and mental health.
Yes, sir.
Video games and mental health, and I can talk all day about this, play a role. But anyone who says that to you, Mr. and Mrs. Western Pennsylvania, listening to this show, is trying to avoid addressing the gun part of the problem.
Right.
That's the only reason. Look, video games depersonalize killing. Some of those games have their root in training tools that we use in the military to take suburban kids who couldn't possibly shoot someone to put them in a war theater so that they are desensitized. That's the goal. And so when you can just hit the reboot button and kill more people and there's more red on the screen, that's a bad thing. It desensitizes the act of murder. So that's a factor,
right?
No doubt about it. But video games exist in Japan and they don't have this problem. Mental health is a problem. We do not have a proper outlet for mental health. Now we're talking in Ohio about red flag legislation.
Yes, sir.
Well, compare red flag legislation to trying to 302 a family member who's acting out.
Or a PFA.
A PFA, same thing. It's not going to be a solution that's going to solve the problem. The guns are an issue. The mental health is an issue. The video games are an issue. But the real issue right now, the STEM issue, is this hatred. And the president can't have it both ways. He can't go to a rally and stoke this hatred and have rally goers punching other people who are demonstrating against him. You know, demonstration is American as apple pie. We glorify the Boston Tea Party, the throwing of the British tea into the Boston Harbor. We have always embraced demonstration, peaceful demonstration. Our strength is in our diversity and our debate. If you hate people because they differ with you and you take action against them, you're a threat to our country. And the president has repeatedly stoked this, from the birther movement to the rallies that he had where he put the media in cages, to the suggestion that he would incarcerate his opponents, to now saying that four members of Congress elected by the citizens of this country should go back when three of them are members of our nation and the fourth has been a naturalized citizen, to this horrible rally in Florida in May where he laughed when someone said we should shoot immigrants.
He said, yes, they do that in the panhandle. And he laughed.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. We've got to take a break.
That's unacceptable.
We'll be right back. David, lead us out of the woods on this, my man. How do we begin to repair this?
First of all, we need and we deserve a higher standard of leadership. Nobody in public life, least of all the president, should be able to have it both ways, where they stand up there and express sympathy, honor the first responders, and then ignore their responsibility to do something about it. We deserve better. We don't have to have the choice between a disruptor, someone who's going to shake up Washington, and someone who's going to be disrespectful or perhaps hateful. We need to put guardrails on our political discourse. We used to have guardrails on our political discourse, but we're like a car careening out of control on a high mountain road with no guardrails. When you say something that incites people, sure, it's the responsibility of the person who pulls the trigger, but when you say something like that and you have a high profile and a position of trust and responsibility, you cannot account for what you say, how it will be heard by the hinged versus the unhinged. And what's happening is we're having this hate speech proliferate in a way that the public should just say, we're not going to accept it, and hold all public officials accountable on that. We need to restore and repair the deficit in our legal system to create tools and laws to address domestic terrorism. The first step in that is accepting that it happens. One way we can hold leaders accountable is require them to tell us the truth. You remember the old saw we grew up with, George Washington cut down a cherry tree and he could not tell a lie? We've been fighting the truth about the hack of our election for 2 years. Russia hacked our election, okay? We have a domestic terror problem in this country. If people tell you otherwise, they're trying to stand in the way of the solution. And the next thing we have to do is we have to embrace our differences. We have to go back to what made this a great country, which is we are all different. You know, we have the Greek Food Festival with St. Nicholas. We have St. Patrick's Day in March. And it's, hey, look at us, but it's really, hey, look at you too. We have always had ethnic pride in this country, but it's never spilled over into white nationalism or white supremacy. We need to say that that's not acceptable here.
Are there folks with the authority and the willingness to change the laws to allow the federal government to go after these white nationalists?
So far, it appears not.
No.
And that's the power of the NRA, which is principally drawing a line around guns, which is impairing any criminal justice reforms. It's an inadequate solution to talk about red flag procedures, and background checks is just an incremental first step. We need to talk realistically and seriously about going back to the assault weapon ban. I don't think any sensible person, I don't think any sensible person believes that's a gun of sport and it belongs in a commercial environment.
Thank you, David Hickton. If I had my way, there'd be a big magnet. It would take all the guns in the world and melt them down. The feds would have them, the cops would have them, and a couple of hunters, but it'll never happen. David Hickton, it's a pleasure, my friend.
Thank you, Marty.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.